everyone. I'm Auntie Sarah.
I'm Auntie Karen.
I'm Uncle Brian.
And together we're
Book Detectives!
Welcome back to the podcast in which we investigate life's littlest mysteries, one used book at a time. Before we begin with our magical number five episode number five, we have a guest to introduce to you. Guest, how would you like to introduce yourself? We didn't practice this.
Could either be that one guy or Metal Mike.
Okay, I like Metal Mike.
Mike it is.
Metal Mike!
There's one in every crowd.
The Metal Mike?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're definitely
then
the Metal
I'm
Mike
one
in this
guy.
In this crowd. Yeah, perfect. All right, well, Metal Mike is joining us in episode five, in which Auntie Karen is going to introduce us to a book that she found at Logos Books. But before we do that, I'd like to start with a little icebreaker. I have a question for you guys.
Okay.
This is a question about a defining book. Like, I want you to think about your first year in college, either in university or in community college or wherever, whichever institution of higher learning you were in when you read your first big, beefy adult book that made you think adult thoughts and, like, introduced you to the life of the mind. What was that book? And where were you when you read it?
I was in college. It was my first year of college. And it was, this is so cliche, it was Nietzsche!
Yay!
It was the gay science.
I like that.
And the epigrams.
Nice.
So, yeah, that, and I don't, I mean, I think it took me years and years to actually understand something of Nietzsche, so I'm not, it didn't make me, yeah, it made me think thoughts, but I'm not sure how big an adult they were. I think they were sort of adolescent Nietzsche thoughts, or post-adolescent Nietzsche thoughts.
I like it.
Yeah, but that's what I got.
That sounds wonderful, thank you.
Ooh, good answer.
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, at that time, who doesn't have post-adolescent Nietzsche thoughts?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
You know? That's great.
It's the perfect time of your life to have Nietzsche thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So I'm Auntie Karen, and the first title that popped into my mind was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which is still a meaningful book in your life, is it not?
Very much, yeah. Uh-huh. I read it when I was 19. And, yeah, it really kind of opened my brain up to all kinds of things. And I've read it many times and I still teach it. So I highly recommend it to anyone and everyone.
Excellent.
Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning.
Very nice. Metal Mike, do you have one that you would like to share with us?
My first year of college?
Yeah.
No, we didn't use textbooks my first year of college, because I was doing syntax and the like, and it was all, problem sets that didn't require textbooks, so I actually ended up putting away a book because I started school.
Oh,
so the opposite.
Yeah, I was trying to read Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time.
You had to put it down.
I had no time for books, stupid books.
You were doing problem sets.
But
for what it's worth, as far as adult thoughts go, I read The Hobbit when I was 6 years old, so.
Well, there you go.
So
you're having adult thoughts at a very young age.
Yeah, I've been reading since I was really young, so. I don't know. And in college, I didn't have time for book-type books because I was always doing 30-page syntax sets, so.
That makes sense.
That makes sense.
All right.
What
so
about you?
Syntax sets for you, then.
Yeah.
For me, it was right before Thanksgiving of my first year of college, I went to another bookstore here in Santa Cruz, Bookshop Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm coming for you on Twitter, Bookshop Santa Cruz. Tag you into this somehow. And at Bookshop, I asked somebody who worked there for a recommendation, and they recommended Richard Brautigan's Trout Fishing in America to me. And I bought it, and I read it, and it was mind-blowing, and I've loved Richard Brautigan ever since. And he inspired my first chapbook of vignettes, Bob Dylan Land, which was a big success.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
Cool.
Wait, didn't someone name themselves Trout Fishing in America?
I've heard of that story. I wouldn't have to, like, Google that and look that up, and we'd have to circle back to this. But yeah, I think you're right.
Happened.
Yeah. I feel like there's all kinds of weird urban myths about that.
Uh-huh.
That book, and yeah, there is somebody who changed their name to that.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard that.
Yeah, I'll Google it.
And then, like, more than one person. Like, it's a thing to change your name to Trout Fishing in America.
What? Really?
Yeah, to make that your middle name.
That's a long middle name.
Yeah. Okay, well, dear listener...
It's a seriously inspiring book.
It's fantastic.
Dear listener, we are going to look into this, and we will yes. let you know via Twitter what we find out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so please...
If you have a copy of Trout Fishing in America, and it has a great inscription in it, take a picture and tweet it at us.
Yeah.
Or, if your name is Trout Fishing in America, send us a tweet. Let us know why you changed your name.
Yeah.
When, how, and why.
Yeah.
Book Detectives.
Yes, at Book Detectives.
Book Detectives.
Tweet at us.
Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
Am I allowed to curse?
I'll allow it.
Okay.
All right, sounds good.
If Auntie Sarah allows it, then...
Said it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah. It's okay. All right, perfect. Well, this is wonderful. We have Nietzsche, we have Syntax Sets, we have Trout Fishing in America, and we have Viktor Frankl. I think that
you know,
is an inspiring
beginning. I just realized
beginning.
I missed my whole first year of actual university college. Because I was at UCSB and a lit major, so I'm sure I read a lot.
Oh, you forgot your entire first year as a lit major at UCSB.
I blocked it out from my mind because they fucking made me hate reading so much.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's a sad story.
Well, we'll
but,
just leave it
there
in
was
the past.
Chaucer.
Oh, good.
And there was Poe, which is what made me change my major from lit to linguistics because I love Edgar Allan Poe.
Uh-huh.
But by the end of my short story in America class,
uh-huh.
fucking hated him.
Oh, well.
I love him again.
I think that you made a good choice in switching out of that department that was leading you to dislike things that you originally liked.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
So apparently one can have selective amnesia in Santa Barbara while studying literature.
You know what? That's as good of a book title as Trout Fishing in America.
Selective amnesia while studying literature in Santa Barbara.
Yep. That's excellent.
Yeah.
All right, perfect.
The sorrows of young metal Mike.
I think that we've sufficiently greased the wheels here, and
right.
We should get to our wonderful book. Please, Auntie Karen, take it away.
Oh my goodness, I have quite the specimen for us today. It is a novel by Virginia Woolf called The Years, originally published in 1937. I have with me a 1965 edition from Harcourt Brace Jovanovic. The reason I picked it up is that I found a note tucked into the very first page. It is on a small sheet of stationery from the Hyatt Regency, Maui.
Whoa.
Yeah, this is it. This is not an inscription. There are no drawings, very little annotating, no meaningful annotating.
I think this falls under ephemera.
Yes.
Yes.
Ephemera.
I have a piece of ephemera. It is a small sheet of stationery. At the top it says years. Just years, and then there is a whole list of page numbers with notes next to them.
Hmm.
And on a first glance, all of these notes appear to be about food.
Whoa.
Okay.
Okay. So that's the overview. Now I'm going to go into some more detail, okay?
Yes.
Are you guys ready?
We're ready for detail.
And dear listener... check out Twitter. There will be a photo, a visual aid of this note.
Yeah,
of the book.
Of the book and of the ephemera.
And the note itself.
So you can follow along.
Okay, yeah. So there's a lot of evidence. I'm going to start briefly with a description from the publisher of the novel so that we have a little more understanding of the subject matter because I personally have not read The Years. I don't think you guys have either.
I have not.
I have not read The Years.
I do enjoy Ms. Wolf,
mm-hmm.
But I haven't read this particular book. Have you, Metal Mike?
Perhaps during your first year at UC.
Maybe.
Erased your memory.
But that first year was all about, you know, the medieval and Renaissance literature. So,
so that would probably be a probably no. Maybe no early 20th century Brit Lit.
Well, no, no, no. Yeah, not Brit Lit, but not early
not
20th
early
century.
Not early 20th century. Yeah. Okay. So here is a description from the publisher. The Years is a story of three generations of the Pargiter family, their intimacies and estrangements, anxieties and triumphs, mapped out against the bustling rhythms of London streets during the first decades of the 20th century. Growing up in a typically Victorian household, the Pargiter children must learn to find their footing in an alternative world where the rules of etiquette have shifted from the drawing room to the air raid shelter. A work of fluid and dazzling lucidity, The Years eschews a simple line of development in favor of a varied and constantly changing style.
Sure.
Sounds about right.
Yep.
Emphasizes the radical discontinuity of personal experiences and historical events. Once again, that's very Woolf. Virginia Woolf's penultimate novel celebrates the resilience of the individual self, and in her dazzlingly fluid and distinctive voice, she confidently paints a broad canvas across time, generation, and class. Okay, so we get the big picture here, right? It spans about 50 years. And it's just, there's so many characters that they're, like, uncountable. And there isn't really, it's not super linear. Okay? So it's snapshots of people talking and various domestic scenes. Which is interesting because then the note, as I said before, is all about food. So now I'm going to read you the note. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the actual note. And then I'm, when I feel like there's more to say, I'll add on a little bit. Okay, so page 10, tea kettle won't boil.
Yes.
Yeah. I went in and I inspected page 10. There are two sisters, Millie and Delia. They're in the front drawing room waiting for the kettle to boil. Millie is complaining about the tea kettle not boiling. And then Delia says, must a kettle boil?
Oh boy.
And then Millie ignores her.
As one should if when we're asked that question. Like,
this must a kettle boil? Yes, that is its job. That is its
precisely how all sisterly relationships function.
One can ask a rhetorical question, the other one knows to remain silent, and life goes on.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the front drawing room.
Good.
Okay, 28 Lamley Shop. Nothing important happens there. 36 dinner, M.O. dying.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so M.O. stands for mother. Mother is upstairs dying while everyone is having dinner.
Holy moly, is this not the most British thing in the world?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Is that what the British do?
I don't know.
They have tea while their mother's dying upstairs?
Feels yeah. Super British.
Yeah.
Pages 39 and 45, doesn't die.
All right.
Delia is a little bit upset
dinner
by this.
Dinner's over, though, right?
Yeah. Okay. No, actually, dinner's still going on.
Oh, my God.
Dinner's going on, Delia, and mother hasn't died yet.
Yeah, Delia's a little upset about this. She really thought her mother was going to die, and she was ready for it. And now she's like, really? Mother rallied. Okay. 68, tea at the Robsons. This is an unbearable tea, apparently. 76, dull dinner - bad fish taste.
Oh, man. Ooh. That doesn't sound good.
So, here's the quote. I went and inspected. Quote, it was a dull fish, Kitty thought. And later, didn't you notice it? The odd taste in the fish, said her mother.
Wow, ew. Okay.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Page 90, yellow pears.
All right.
I went and inspected. this is about yellow pears hanging on the orchard wall. They are so ripe that they are swollen. And the skin is broken because the wasps have gotten them.
Ew. Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't want any of that.
No.
No.
Page 104, eating chicken.
Okay.
Sure.
As you do.
Yeah. Here's the quote. This is Eleanor. Quote, and now she felt nothing. Hungry merely. Merely a chicken eater. Blank. Damn. But as she ate, the sense of her father imposed itself.
Oh, boy.
She liked his solidity as he sat opposite her, munching his chicken methodically.
Holy moly.
Oh, so they're all eating
end
chicken.
Quote.
When one munches chicken, it must be methodically.
Yeah.
Munching chicken
very methodically.
Very methodically
done.
Yeah. Right?
Okay.
Right. Okay. 168. Rose to tea. So this is a scene in which this young character, Rose, has gone to tea. And this is about her hosts, quote, "They were silent. Rose looked at the flower again. Why did I come?" She kept asking herself.
Good question, Rose.
I know. Why had she broken up her morning, interrupted her day's work, when it was clear to her they had not wished to see her?
Whoa.
So I guess another...
Not very good hospitality.
Yeah. Sounds like a really frustrating book about meals.
Another unbearable tea.
That people don't want to have.
Keep in mind that these entries are, you know, many, many pages apart. It's not as if the whole book is about food.
Right.
This reader has very carefully gone through and just
chosen
plucked.
A thread. Yeah.
Just plucked. Okay. 211. So this is 50 pages later.
Whoa.
211. Biscuits and chocolate for the night. So there's a character, Celia. She's staying with someone, and her host has left her a tin with 4 biscuits and a pale piece of chocolate, should she get hungry in the night.
Okay.
229. Sal lunches in a restaurant. Yeah. Apparently, 2 characters, Sarah and Sal, eat a, quote, admirable mutton.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah. Okay, on page 280, there's dining. Although I went and looked at page 280, and there actually was no dining. It seems to just be a bunch of people in a drawing room talking, and there's no eating.
Oh, so that's a misreading.
Uh-oh.
I think that might be a misreading.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe she wrote dining meant to write drawing.
Maybe.
I don't know that it's a she. That was just a guess.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
290. Eating in a bomb shelter.
Mm. That's, you got to do it.
Sometimes that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went and checked this out. There's a group of people underground. They are trying to eat their pudding while the Germans are overhead, and there is a lot of gunfire.
Pudding is never...
How can you have your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Right.
Yeah.
It's never the kind of pudding I want it to be.
But yeah.
In British novels. That's...
Yeah. Well, there's more pudding later.
It's cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not,
really?
Yes.
It's not steamed. Pudding. Steamed
it's
pudding.
Cake.
Oh, it's like bread pudding.
Even breadier.
It's even breadier than bread pudding?
It's like they make a puddingish batter and put it in a pan and then steam it and then it gets spongy.
Yeah, it's like...
Yeah. It's like cake. Yeah.
It's not quite what you want.
It's like a chamois.
What's ew!
Oh, because it's spongy? Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Very good.
Oh,
okay, there's four more quotes on this piece of evidence. Okay, page 318. This is a starred entry, so I'm thinking it's much more important.
Okay.
Underdone mutton and a gently disgusting meal.
Gently disgusting, I love it.
Okay, the quote is, "They sat down and she took the carving knife and made a long incision. A thin trickle of juice ran out. It was underdone. She looked at it. Mutton oughtn't to be like that, she said. Beef, but not mutton."
She's right.
No, but is she right?
I don't know anything about eating mutton. I have never done it.
If it's undercooked,
well,
then it's like extra gamey and like
I feel
pungent.
Like you can eat lamb. Like you don't need lamb.
To be well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Although
no,
mutton,
doesn't.
I guess, is old lamb, and so you need to cook it a lot to make it tender.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know.
This idea of it being gently disgusting, this is from the author of the note. It's not actually in the book. The book doesn't actually say gently disgusting. This is an interpretation.
I don't know.
Gently disgusting.
Like, a gentle rolling, ebbing and flowing of disgust. I'm trying to imagine that feeling.
Like you're more disgusted and then slightly less, and it never quite crosses the line into full-blown disgust.
It never becomes
so
violent.
It's gentle.
I appreciated that phrase when I thought it was Virginia Woolf saying it, but now that I know it's not Virginia
now
Woolf
that it isn't
it,
a genius.
I don't actually like it. Yeah, it is very smart or very interesting. So
Uncle
I
Brian.
Think that says more about me than
I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it does.
Gently disgusting.
It feels like someone's trying too hard.
Oh, all right.
Maybe she's Irish.
I'm trying
Irish
to figure
have a weird
out
sense of humor like that.
What would I describe as gently? I'll think about this.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out what
we'll
I'd describe.
We'll come back. We'll come back. Okay, another starred entry. There are only 2. This is the second of 2.
Okay.
Page 350. Fruit.
We haven't had much fruit yet. I mean, we had the pears, but those were gently disgusting pears.
Yeah, more than gently.
So, shocking. I was intrigued about the fruit. Here we have a scene. When Maggie turns off the light, everything appears ghostly. Ghostly apples. Ghostly bananas. The specter of a chair.
Ghost fruit.
Ghostly apples and bananas.
Fruit.
Yeah. Yeah, the writer of these notes did not mention that it was ghostly fruit. Just fruit. Just fruit.
It's ghost fruit.
Okay, two more. Page 398. Soup without enough spoons.
That's hard.
Yeah. So here, several people are sitting around.
You could drink it out of a bowl, right?
Yeah. They are having soup out of mugs. That's exactly what's happening.
Oh. Yeah.
There are several people sitting around drinking soup out of mugs.
That feels
prettier. Yeah.
Yeah, and then someone... who wants a spoon? One of the characters asks. And then the character Kitty is in a reverie. Quote, her sort of people, she thought, did not want spoons. The others, the English, did. She had been making this distinction between people her whole life.
Oh, that's good.
I bet the people at the tea that she hated being at, those are spoon people.
Spoon people are not spoon. Spoon people are mug people. What are you? What are we?
I think I'm a mug person.
Are you a mug person for soup?
Can I be a mug and spoon? Can I be a mug with a spoon?
See, I like the assist I of do the spoon. Like that. I like the mug with the spoon.
Yeah.
Metal Mike? Mug or spoon?
Well, I often eat my soup out of a mug with a spoon, so...
Yeah. All right,
yeah.
So, I think so we're double.
So maybe it doesn't feel like an actual relevant distinction?
Hmm. Well, what about you?
Well, you know, there are certain people who have, like, people who actually go out and they get those lovely, shallow bowl plates,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In mm-hmm. the whole set.
Yeah.
I've never done that. Yeah. I don't think I ever will because I'm satisfied with a mug.
I can show you the mug I eat my soup out of and you can tweet it.
Ooh.
Let's take a picture of that.
Yeah, we'll do that. Uncle
Twitter.
Brian, are you a mug or a spoon person, or both, or neither?
I would love to claim that I am a mug person, because I think that makes me seem more down-to-earth, and but I'm afraid I am a spoon person,
yeah.
And very much a bowl and spoon person.
Oh, a bowl and spoon person.
With the shallow bowl?
Well, I don't...
Doesn't matter.
I don't entertain.
That takes entertaining. Yeah.
I don't prefer a shallow bowl because I feel like your soup cools off too fast in a shallow bowl.
You have to work at it.
I like
quickly,
I like the depth of a mug because the underlayers stay hot.
Yeah.
I'm very impatient and I end up burning myself if it's too deep like that. Like I burn my mouth with mug soup.
Yeah.
So maybe I do actually prefer the shallow bowls because I.
You know, another good thing about the shallow bowl is it has the wide rim so that if you're eating something that, like, maybe you come across something that was used to flavor the soup that you don't want to be eating, like a piece of ham bone or something.
Or a bay leaf.
You can spoon it out and put it on the edge of your shallow bowl.
Yes.
Maybe I'm coming around to the idea of a shallow bowl. Can't do that with a mug.
You can't.
It's not doable with a mug.
That's a good point.
We have options now.
If it's a spoon, though, it has to be a very small spoon. I don't enjoy large spoons.
I do.
I like small spoons, except for when it comes to soup. And then I want a big spoon.
Yeah,
what?
Spoons. Yeah. Yeah.
So for a hearty spoonful
of soup. It's three against one for
soups.
Spoon size. All right.
Big spoons all the way. I want to put as much stuff in my mouth as possible.
That's a special way to enjoy soup.
Yes.
Okay. That's an eating style. All right.
It's an eating style.
So, last entry.
All right.
Page 410. A rice pudding world.
I want to live there.
Yeah. Now, I originally thought that this said a nice pudding world.
Oh.
But then I went and looked and it actually is rice pudding world.
I'd live there
every day.
Which is
a good kind of pudding.
Well,
yeah.
What it means...
British pudding.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what it means, though, is a world without boundaries.
What?
A white counterpane world.
What?
Yeah. And then there is a really beautiful quote just under this that is completely ignored. It's not in the notes and it's not annotated. And this is it, quote, there was the glass in his hand, in his mind, a sentence. and he wanted to make other sentences. But how can I, he thought. He looked at Eleanor, who sat with a silk handkerchief in her hands. Unless I know what's solid, what's true, in my life, in other people's lives.
Oh.
That's Edward.
But not rice pudding.
I'm still stuck on rice pudding. Yeah.
A rice pudding world. I believe that's also Edward. He's interested. He thinks, what, wouldn't it be nice if it were a rice pudding world, if there were fewer distinctions, not this nor that, all just rice pudding. And then he changes his mind.
Oh. That's good, because that sounds like it sucks.
Yeah.
I don't think of rice pudding that way. Maybe the rice pudding that I make is a little bit more solid than that. Maybe it becomes a little bit more gelatinous and a little bit more firm.
Yeah.
I have a firmer, more boundaried rice pudding world in mind.
Are they thinking you can't tell where the pudding stops and the rice starts? Is that why it's boundaryless? Is like it all or sort of becomes its own...
It's amorphous. It's not a little pedophore. It's not a little cake. It's not a little cucumber sandwich. It's just mush. It just takes soup. On the shape of whatever it's sitting in. I don't know. I don't know at all. Okay. So...
Oh, I've got a question. Yes. Are you rice pudding with raisins people or rice pudding without raisins people?
I'm against raisins.
High five me.
Yes. Boom. No raisins.
No raisins in my rice pudding.
No raisins.
Period. Says Uncle Brian.
I'm against raisins.
Oh, even on one's own.
Yes.
Raisins, currants, all that shit.
Metal Mike is not into it.
I enjoy a raisin separate from other things.
Yeah.
I don't like raisins in things. Yeah. But I like them by themselves. In fact, when I was a small child, I don't mind telling this story, I was a little frustrated with the Raisin Bran because it was raisins and flakes all mixed up together.
You just want all raisins?
I wanted it to be one thing or the other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wrote a letter to Kellogg's, and I remember it so clearly. It was, to whom it may concern, I got that phrase from my mom, to whom it may concern, my name is Karen. I'm 7 years old, and boy, have I got an idea for you. And I went on to describe the merits of packaging the raisins and the bran separately.
Yeah.
And then each person could put the preferred amount, or you could do the really proper thing and just eat them separately, which, you know,
yeah.
Makes so you more are sense. Also opposed to a rice pudding world, but in your world, it's a raisin bran metaphor.
It's
like
a raisin bran
metaphor. You want them separate, world. You want distinctions.
Yeah.
And they actually wrote me back. They said, "Dear Karen, I remember the first line. While your idea is not new to us, and then they went on to say, you know, good creative thinking. We're actually not going to do that, but you know, continue to enjoy Raisin Bran. It was like, you know, something like that. It was a letter from an actual person. It was signed and everything.
Wow,
yeah, wonderful. I think my parents were really shocked that someone actually wrote me back.
I'm kind of shocked.
Yeah,
it was a different time.
It was a different time.
It was almost."
There was no email.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
It was almost 15 years ago, when I was 7.
Yeah,
I
know. Exactly.
So this is the note. So
okay.
Briefly, let me tell you about the note. Years. Page 10. Sorry. I can't read this writing. I have to look at my notes. Okay. Page 10, tea kettle won't boil. 36, dinner, mother dying. 39, 45, doesn't die. Unbearable tea at the Hobsons. Page 76, dull dinner, bad fish taste. 90, yellow pears. 104, eating chicken. 168, Rose goes to tea. 211, biscuits and chocolate for the night. 229, Sal lunches in a restaurant. 290, eating in a bomb shelter. 318, underdone mutton and a gently disgusting meal. 350, fruit. 398, soup without enough spoons, and 410, a rice pudding world. These are the notes in toto.
Okay.
So, I have some questions.
Yes.
My questions are, who is this person?
Yes.
And what are they doing? Is this, like, what is this? What is happening here?
I would like to think that this is a person, judging from the stationery and the writing, this is somebody who can, one, afford to stay at this hotel.
The Hyatt Regency in Maui.
Yeah, that's something. So this is, and I think that it's a woman.
I...
Judging from the script.
I do too. What?
Oh my gosh, I thought that dog was somebody yelling at us.
Oh.
It was really scary, and I thought it was coming from that room down the hallway.
Oh my goodness. Dear listener, there is a dog barking outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof,
there's weird. Not much we can do about it. No. So. Anyway.
Yeah. I just got startled.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So the handwriting is very loopy, and...
As in crazy?
No, it's ornate.
Oh, ornate.
Lots of loops. And what it reminds me of is my great-grandmother's handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandmother, Helen, we called her Lala, she had that handwriting. There's a very specific feature that I remember. Whenever a word ends with a T, instead of crossing the T, there's just sort of an elaborate flourish. So the last T is actually not crossed. It's just that when you're finished drawing the body of the T, it kind of comes up like a flourish.
Hmm.
And that happens here more than once. Not for the word restaurant, but other words.
So you're thinking older woman.
I'm thinking older woman. Yeah. I'm thinking older woman. But fruit ends like that.
Yeah. An for older instance. Woman who can afford to stay yeah. at the
chocolate for the night ends yeah. like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's interesting.
I also like to think that this is a woman of a certain age who can afford to stay at the Regency, the Hyatt Regency, excuse me, of Maui, and who is in a kind of book club that is bigger than your average book club. Like, this is like a book.
Oh, this is a
seminar conference
club.
And she's creating yes. notes for her lecture on the hours, on the years, not the yeah. hours. On the years, based on food stuff,
she's gonna give a little talk.
She's gonna give a culinary reading of the years.
Okay, that's good because this is what I couldn't figure out.
Yeah,
because the Hyatt Regency Maui and the sort of older woman's handwriting,
yeah.
seemed hard for me to reconcile with the fact that I make these lists all the time. This is the kind of list
yeah.
that you would find in a lot of my books.
Yeah.
Because, especially literary books,
yeah,
because
yeah.
what I am often doing when I am reading those books is I am preparing to write a paper
yeah.
on a very specific prompt. And so I am making
mm-hmm,
page
mm-hmm.
number notes in
mm-hmm.
the back cover or whatever of that. So I'm tracing something as it goes through, a through line sort of theme or symbol or recurring motif or something.
Yep, yep, yep.
And so I was thinking, this person is writing a paper on food in Virginia Woolf. But I was like, but are they writing at the Hyatt Regency Maui? And why are they old?
What is happening?
So it's a book club
yeah.
presentation.
A book club presentation. So yeah. less formal or more...
Well,
I have a friend.
Maybe it's a literary conference.
Yeah,
literary
it could
conference.
Be.
And but maybe the theme is all those awkward social interactions that you have at meals
at
you don't
meals,
really
yeah.
want to have.
That would be interesting.
Oh, right. So it's more
like,
about the social interaction.
I gotta go to dinner with the...
Such and such.
With such and such.
And the
I
tea.
Hate them so much. Oh, God,
I
use spoons.
I like that idea, but I feel like if this is somebody who does this professionally, these notes will not be on such a small little pad of paper.
So,
I wonder if this is a woman
yes.
who's on vacation preparing for this thing. I have a friend whose family lives in Missouri
uh-huh.
and whose mother is part of a very distinguished reading club.
Ooh.
Mm.
Reading club.
Yeah, like it's like a reading group, reading club where it all of the high society ladies of this small town in Missouri are involved, and each of them have to present basically a conference paper on whatever the book.
Oh my.
Is. Like, it's a big thing with, like, a luncheon, and at the luncheon, you go and you give a talk,
so
and you read the
formal,
talk.
It's formal, but not academic.
Amateur academia,
exactly.
Yeah.
For the upper echelons of, small-town
society. High
society.
Wow.
I know. So I'm wondering if it's something like that. Like, either she's on vacation at the Hyatt Regency, or she happens to collect these little,
notepads.
Of, yeah, these notepads from fancy
from
hotels.
From trips with her family, with
yeah.
her husband.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I like that idea. Another question that I have, so this is for you, Uncle Brian. When you are making a list like this, is this your only list, or is this just like the condensed version, and then you have a much longer list say, digitally, that you're actually adding a lot of, like, full quotes mm-hmm. and starting to do your interpretation. Because this is pretty paltry for a paper. There's not much here.
This
is, like, a first pass. Like, just sort of a page number. Like, this is where you might find stuff.
Yeah.
But you're not actually doing the interpretive work yet.
And
you're,
I would be more... I would probably include more. Like, this doesn't feel like... Like, I wouldn't have just put fruit for those rotting pears. I feel like I would have... said, I would have sort of done
wasp-infested fruit.
Yeah, or even a first pass reading of it. Yeah. So sort of like rotting fruit or, you know,
Yeah, it doesn't feel professional to me because also there's no annotations in that book. That book is clean.
Yes,
the
okay.
book is pretty clean. Yeah, you would think there would be more.
Yeah.
I think your point about the pears is interesting because the pears were hanging from the orchard wall. They were heavy. They were swollen.
Yes.
And the wasps had gotten them. All it says here is yellow pears. So the salient detail that this person put down is yellow.
I wonder how her talk went.
Oh, she killed it. I'm sure she killed it. I'm sure she was brilliant.
So much depends on the yellow pear.
It does feel like a first pass. There's so heterogeneous the things she's finding there.
Yeah.
And that some of them are, like Metal Mike said, about really awkward social interactions having to do with food. And some of them are just, there's a rotting pear hanging off the tree.
Yeah.
And those wouldn't go in the same, like, I wouldn't put those in the same paper. Like, that's not the same. So it's sort of like, let me just read through, find all the food, and then figure out what I can say about some of them.
Pulled six or eight of these examples in a more cohesive way. Maybe she's also so brilliant that she doesn't have to write as much stuff down.
That's entirely possible.
That's true.
Yeah, maybe she's just one of those mega minds.
Mega minds!
Mind head.
Well, so, all right.
This is a woman of a certain age.
Yeah.
Preparing,
a certain age.
preparing some sort of talk or paper. And it's a first pass. They're much more detailed musings elsewhere. Maybe on her proper steno pad.
On her word processor.
I mean, maybe she's doing this on vacation, right? At the Hyatt Regency Maui, and then she's gonna come back to Missouri and give her a talk.
I do have one more piece of the puzzle I want to share with you.
Please.
And see if this helps and or changes anything. The font on Hyatt Regency Maui is really old. I mean, this is like late 70s, early 80s. I will pass it around so you can look, dear listener. It will be on Twitter. Take a gander. It's also this sort of peacock blue color.
Oh, gosh.
Pretty.
That's very Golden Girls.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, right?
But old. Very old. Yes.
Yeah, it's old. So that helps us a little bit with placing the time period.
Right.
The book was published, as I said, in 65. So this could be
70s,
decades.
This note
could be decades old. How does it smell, Auntie Sarah?
You know what? It doesn't smell like anything. I was expecting it to smell like something.
Would you like to look at the font, Metal Mike? I have one other piece.
Is this a nice hotel?
Yeah, I'm going to... Let's talk about the hotel.
Yeah.
I thought I would do a little research into the Hyatt Regency Maui, and I found a pretty entertaining Yelp review from Chris in Massachusetts. So I just thought I'd share that. Do you guys want to hear it?
Yeah. Yes, please.
We can picture this woman at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Okay. are you ready?
Yes. Yeah.
This was the third island we visited for our honeymoon.
Oh, boy.
Unfortunately, the Hyatt most definitely fell short compared to the other resorts we stayed at.
Oh.
Number one, there were bugs all over the nightstand next to our bed.
Ew.
That's
kind of
gross.
Even after cleaning, these bugs remained.
What? Are they super glued to the nightstand? What's going on? Are they, like, macrame-ed to the nightstand? What's
They're
going
part
on
of the
there?
Decor. They belong there.
Not sure what type of bugs, but they were more prominent at night, which could indicate young roaches.
Oh, wow.
It
okay.
sure could.
I could not get comfortable.
Metal Mike is enjoying this.
I could not get comfortable knowing they were there and also on the couch the last night of my honeymoon.
Ew.
This caused unnecessary tension between my wife and I.
Oh, my.
Because I just... This is a man?
Oh, that's the dude.
Oh, my God. This is a man.
Yeah.
Squirmish around young roaches.
Well, I'm sorry. That's right. It could be a lesbian woman.
Oh. It could be.
But I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. It sounds like a complaining guy.
As yeah. I just couldn't deal with them knowing they were crawling around a foot near my head.
Oh, my God.
At 1 a.m. that same night, I brought up my concern to the front desk and was promised a call by the manager first thing in the morning.
Oh, sure.
I never received a call.
Yeah,
of course you didn't. Sure you didn't. Welcome to Hawaii.
All right. Number two. The hotel pool area was exceptionally crowded. This was the only place in Hawaii we had trouble getting a spot near the pool.
Oh, my God.
Most days, lounge chairs were 75% occupied or had towels draped over them as spot savers by 9 a.m. So, basically, it was choose to eat breakfast or risk not sitting by the most desirable amenity.
Oh, my God.
Insufferable.
I mean, that sounds...
Yeah.
It sounds like a resort.
Yeah.
The hotel.
A resort that has 75% occupancy? How could we be at such a place?
Oh, my God.
The hotel didn't seem to police the rampant spot saving until the final day we were there.
Yeah, I wonder why, because this guy was probably complaining.
Yeah,
probably. Oh, my God.
Number three. The clientele was decidedly different than the other two islands we visited.
Oh, my God.
This isn't necessarily the Hyatt's fault.
What do they want to do, screen people?
The demographic was mostly a spring break type of crowd huge families.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Girls gone wild, yeah.
And small children.
This definitely caused some overcrowding issues, as a family of six would occupy a huge chunk of real estate by the pool, but never actually be near their lounge chairs.
Oh, my God.
This guy went on vacation or his honeymoon during spring break and is complaining about the spring break crowd.
Right.
Yeah,
he should have maybe...
What a guy. Yeah.
I expected the Hyatt Regency Maui would be empty during spring break.
Wow.
I have a completely unrealistic view of the world, and I hate you for it.
It was supposed to be just me and my bride.
And now it's
my lovely bride.
Maui.
My dying bride.
All right, let's continue.
Okay, sorry. Groups of people would also routinely bring cans of beer to the pool.
Oh my God, the hell you say?
Uh-huh. There was also a large New England presence.
Oh, my. That's the most unforgivable aspect of all.
Granted, I'm from Massachusetts as well, so I could be viewed as a hypocrite. But the last type of person I wanted to end up next to in Hawaii was fucking Jimmy from Fall River to Tommy from Quincy.
Oh, my God!
And that is, of course, the Regency's fault.
This guy is a real piece of work. This guy's incredible.
That Jimmy parked the car.
If we stayed in Maui again, more than likely we would stay closer to the eastern side of the island.
Oh, please.
Near most of the popular landmarks. At minimum, we would stay next door at the Marriott, not the Hyatt.
At minimum.
Why would that be
different? If we stayed in the same area again.
Oh, and why would he find less population at the more popular landmarks? That
I don't
sounds
know.
Pretty stupid.
Maybe they're more expensive to stay.
Well, thank you, Chris from Massachusetts.
No.
That was very helpful.
Oh, my God. What a guy.
Yeah. So think of our poor woman trying to make these notes in such a spot.
I appreciate her so much more for her amazing attention to detail.
I bet she was down at the pool at 6 a.m. with her beach towel. She left
spot
it there.
Saving
she
go
left
get breakfast.
It there. Then she went and got breakfast. So she didn't have to make a choice.
Yeah.
Right.
She was up early.
This
and then
is
she
what
had
you
her.
Do.
They don't
she,
police that.
No. No. And she went and had her coffee. And then she had a nice little breaststroke up and down in the pool and dried off her hands
she
and picked up
out
Virginia
of there
Wolf.
Before the kids in the spring breakers.
By 11, she went in to have her her little siesta.
Yep.
And then get back at it.
I wish I could live her life.
Literary analysis.
Sounds wonderful.
She's charming.
I like her.
I like her, too.
I like her a lot.
I know.
Chris, on the other hand, is a real piece of work, and I want nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
What a guy. Oh, my God. Yeah.
I don't come to Hawaii to hang out in Massachusetts, God damn it.
Yeah, just like that.
I can't believe it.
Oh, my God.
You shouldn't allow more than one group from Massachusetts to book
your
hotel. I
wanted to end up next to in Hawaii was fucking Jimmy from Fall River. Talking to Tommy from Quincy.
Tommy from Quincy.
Can you imagine? I wonder what his bride is like. That she just allows him to make an ass of himself like this.
Maybe she's the same way.
Oh, boy.
They went to three islands together. I'm just thinking about it. What an exhausting honeymoon.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, guys, what do you think? Have we solved it?
Oh, we solved a bunch of mysteries. We solved a bunch of mysteries. Mystery solved.
Mystery solved.
All right, so we're going to...
What do you think Chris was reading?
Oh.
Or was he reading?
Oh, I don't think he reads.
He was reading by the pool.
He was probably reading like a Tom Clancy novel or something.
Either that or his phone.
Yeah.
Either that or he was, you know...
Or cheap magazines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some dumb thing.
Hmm.
Some dumb, uninteresting thing. Clearly, because he was so bored out of his mind that he was too busy policing everyone else around him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, don't put your towel there. If you're not going to sit there, you can't drape your towel over the chair.
Oh, my God. Yes. All right. This is fantastic.
Do we have any tweets, Auntie Sarah?
Yeah, we have tweets. So I'd like to give a special shout-out to three new Twitter followers to the program, three friends of the program.
Yes.
I'm just going to give a quick shout out to Jen, Kristen, and Anu. Thank you so much for listening. And check out Kristen and Jen's fantastic theories on the books from episodes 1 and 2. They're great, Anu. I'm waiting to hear from you. I know that you're out there listening.
You must add a theory.
Tweet us.
Tweet us, please. We have a couple other followers, too, but I'm pretty sure that they're sex robots from Russia. So I won't say hello to them.
Prove us wrong. Prove us wrong.
Prove
sex
us wrong,
robots from Russia.
Andrea.
Tweet us a theory.
Yeah, Andrea and Yesenia.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong. It's like a threat or a dare.
Yeah.
Probably shouldn't go there. Anyway, but I wanted to end this special episode 5 with the reading of a hashtag book detectives tweet that I found. This is from July 12th of 2013, 5:30 a.m.
Whoa.
Early.
Real early. Here we go.
2013.
Here it is. Help, comma, book detectives. Trying to remember a kid's book, 9 to 12-ish, about evacuees sent by boat, all caps, to USA. Think she was called Biddy? ? Read in 80s.
Oh. So, by boat.
By boat. She's a boat evacuee. So, dear listeners, if you know this book and you can remember the title of it, let us know and we'll get you in touch with this woman who apparently woke up really early the morning of July 12, 2013.
Desperate to remember the name of a book she read in the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, everyone. Have a wonderful evening. And until next time on Book Detectives. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.